I'm Sheila Finkelstein. As most or all of you know, unless you were referred to this call by someone, I produce Picture to Ponder, which most of you are familiar with, a magazine.
And twice weekly newsletter, which goes out with photos and questions, which are inspired by the photos and have people reflecting. It's my aim to have people looking and seeing things in new and different ways. And emails I get and what people say, my mission has or is being accomplished. And that's what really excites me. I've also had and will be doing an upcoming series of 4-session teleclasses, which expands further on that. Rafina, as you all know from my different emailings and promotion, has done an ebook, Master Your Digital Camera, which I purchased last year. And have really enjoyed, and I happened to have lost it in a computer crash, and I wrote to have her see if she would send it back to me, and then called, and unexpectedly was actually got her live, and we started a conversation. I invited her to do this call, and I'm really excited. When I take photos, I'm mainly just going by gut. I'm using my digital camera. Every time I read the instructions for what to do, I forget it unless I'm not using, because I'm not using them. I just like to do. And so it's great to have someone who's actually studied
the different things and how to use the camera and to be able to share with us. Rafina, were you able to get back on?
I was able to get back on, but I'm not at all sure that I'm in the moderator mode.
Well, you know what? I'm going to start, and if it doesn't work, then we'll just have to ask everybody to mute. I'm going to actually mute the call and see if we can talk and be heard.
Okay.
That looks like pretty much everybody is muted.
Okay. That's great.
Okay. I briefly said how we met, and if you'd like to introduce yourself and an overview, and then we'll kick it in.
Okay, I am Rafina James. I am author of Master Your Digital Camera in 4 Easy Steps, and that came about, actually, not by any great plan of mine. It was not anything that I had really planned. I had a friend, a business partner, who had an idea and wanted me to write this book. And I said, oh, I'm just too busy. I just really don't have time. And he kept encouraging me and finally talked me into it. And I started, and it was a much bigger job than I'd ever thought. And it went on for months and months. It took me about 6 months to write it, but I did. And, collecting all the pictures and photos for it and all that just took forever, but it finally got done. So it's finished, and it's there, which is great. And I'm a lot like you, Sheila, in the way that I take pictures. It's also with the gut. The way that I learned about digital photography started because my husband and I do websites, and we had to take product photos for client websites. So we had to use digital. And we bought one of the very first digital cameras that was less than 1 megapixel, had internal storage only. This was way before flashcards. And that was it. You could take so many pictures, and then you had to unload it. And then if you were out in the field, you were really stuck, unless you brought your laptop with you and you had that capacity. It was different then in those early days.
Uh-huh.
But it was an Olympus, and it had a wonderful, wonderful lens. And the pictures, I said, after a while, I took so many product photos that I said, I wonder how this is going to do outside and really out there in nature. So I started to take it out on walks with me and would come back and unload. And, of course, I would always run out of space. So I'd get mad and come back and have to unload, and then you couldn't go, you don't have time to go out there on to the middle of that hike again. But they were beautiful. The pictures were very, very nice. So then I had to have a better camera. So, and that's what got me going. So I just fell in love with digital, and I'm still in love with digital.
Okay, so you trained yourself out of necessity.
Yep, that's how it started. Necessity is the mother of invention.
Okay. What we're going to do is there are several people that have asked questions, and I was particularly caught up with some of the things you said in our initial conversation, so we're going to go through some of the principles, and in between I'll ask you some of the participant questions.
Okay.
That work for you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the things that I really like, because I guess I do it in my photos, is making the connection with nature and people when I do people, but I don't think about it. And you said that one of the things you could really talk about was how to connect with people and nature with your photographs. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, I think the first thing, where it all starts, is a good foundation in understanding good composition. Again, this is nothing that you're going to think about consciously once you're actually taking the photo. It has to be something that's so internalized that you just pick up that camera and you put it in the place where it has good composition right away. So let's talk about some of those elements. You know, sometimes all it takes is changing the composition just a little bit, just tweaking it a little bit to pop that important element out, to really make that photo say something. And at first, it can be a conscious effort, but eventually it needs to become internalized so you can take those photos fast and you just know, oh, there it is, click. And you just get it right away. And let's talk about some of those elements. Now, I put up a page. If for those of you who are not on dial-up and can see it, if you go to masteryourdigitalcamera.com, that's spelled masteryourdigitalcamera.com, masteryourdigitalcamera.com/photos.html, all small letters. Photos is photos.html.
Okay, great. And just so that everybody knows, I did send out this link if you didn't get a chance to open that email with it, and I will be sending out a follow-up email with which will have any of the links that we're mentioning on the call. They are beautiful photos, and so you can just kind of image them as Rafina talks, and you'll be able to really appreciate them after the call.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry for the interruption.
No, that's fine. Let's go to the first photo, which I just added
Rafina,
this morning.
Mm-hmm. One question I'm moved to draw, being sometimes visual, and some other people might be thinking about it too, a little bit mm-hmm. technical. When you're talking about framing your picture, in the camera there's always that little square window.
Yes.
How does that relate to using when you're framing your picture, if at all?
Well, it helps you know where the center of the shot is going to be. And in different cameras, it's slightly different. So you really have to find out how your camera works with it. Because sometimes those frames are just the center, and sometimes they're where the entire picture will show. And so you've got the crop lines.
Okay.
You won't necessarily see what's outside the edges of that square. It just depends on the camera. So you certainly can help you use that frame. Some cameras even have the rule of thirds grid right across the camera. Now, what am I talking about when I say the rule of thirds grid? Well, let's take a look at picture number one for those of you that can see it. It's a picture of Morro Bay and that big rock, that big little hill there out in the bay. And
is that something you've added?
Yes.
I have number one is three friends on a sofa.
Refresh. I just added it.
Okay.
This is called 00. Sorry, 0. 0 Morro Bay and 00. Is it coming up?
Oh, yep. Got it with boats.
Okay. Yeah, I needed it on the top, so I numbered it 0 since I've already numbered the others.
Okay.
Okay. So you'll see that the rock is on the left side of the frame, or towards the left. It's not in the center. Centering something like that is not a really good idea because it becomes a very boring photo. If you look over to 00 Morro Bay, you'll see very light grid lines, which divide the photo in thirds horizontally and vertically. Can you see that, Sheila?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the upper left quadrant, where the lines cross, mm-hmm. that's where you want to usually put your main subject or a point of interest, either in the upper left or the upper right one, like right on the cross if you can, or as close as you can get it. So, and you want to divide your horizon on one of those lines, the horizontal lines. You want the water and the skyline to be either on the bottom third or either on the upper third of the photo. And then you want whatever is vertical, the top of that, to end up on one of the upper grid lines. Well, it depends on how you compose it. You could put it on the bottom one if there was, like, if your waterline was on the upper third and you had a fish swimming that you could actually see, you would put that on the lower the cross of the vertical and the horizontal third lines. But most pictures are taken with the main subject being right there on the upper right or left cross of those vertical horizontal lines. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And people, if you, I'm sorry, I thought it was 5-star and that wasn't it. I'll find it. I was going to say, if you're having trouble, if there's something you're not seeing, there's something that you can mute. Okay, I'll have to disregard that. Sorry for the interruption. And this is really great, Rufina, because I've heard about the rule of three, read about it all the time, and mm-hmm. to hear it and then see it makes that added connection for me.
Yeah, so anytime you have lines in your photo, like horizontal lines, water lines, sky lines, always think of that rule of thirds, because that is a natural composition or element of composition that makes your photo look good. It'll just automatically make your photo look good. So to get good at this one, I would suggest go out and take pictures with this in mind for a week or two. Just go out and look for shots that fall into this pattern and just take shots and get used to it. And then you get it into your inner eye by doing it over and over and by getting used to it. And then you start to see things when you just, without your camera, you start to look at things and you can fit it right into that rule of thirds, as if you were looking at the lens of your camera right there at the moment. Then you know it's internalized. When you can look at nature and just fit stuff in there, you know it's already internalized and you've got that concept. The next thing that's very, very important is sharp focus. Sharp focus is something that a lot of people forget about. Now, on a foggy picture like this, focus is not so important, but because fog, the whole nature of fog is that it's not that clear, but still the main subject needs to be focused well. But let's look down below. When you're talking about people, you really have to focus well. It really needs to be sharp in order to make the point. Another thing about that photo is that you...
Okay, well, so let me interrupt again for a minute. Mm-hmm. You speak of focus, and one of the people did ask, how do you get pictures to be sharp? Most of us are working with point-and-shoot cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to address how to make sure that it's sharp?
Well, with a point-and-shoot camera, it's really easy. It's automatic. You just have to aim at the most important thing that you want focused, and the rest will take care of itself. The biggest mistake people make with point-and-shoot cameras in getting them out of focus is that they will actually focus at the sky. Like if you have three people standing there, they will look at the whole picture and not realize that they're that little, usually on the camera you have a little dot or some circle or something that will tell you that that's your focus, that's what you want to focus on, and that's what will be sharp. They will look at the picture as a general picture, and instead of aiming at one person in that picture, they'll aim at the space between the heads without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're focusing on the sky, which is a long distance beyond the subjects. So your focus will be out the camera will try to focus the sky and forget about the people in front of it that you're trying to take a picture of. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing to really remember is that's when you can use those little dots and little things on your camera lens or viewfinder to your advantage.
Also something about folk for lighting or whatever, like clicking but not all the way in at the
you want
and then moving out so the sky is in the middle?
Yes, you can lock it in. And that is usually a half press. You just depress the button, the shutter button, halfway, and it locks it. And then you can move the camera and take that picture so that you get good composition, but you are focused. The distance the camera is focusing on is on that person. You've locked it in.
Now,
some cameras are very touchy. My camera is very touchy with this and only works half the time because the mechanism is kind of touchy. So you have to play with your camera, really learn how to get it, how to get that feeling. It's a feel for it that you have to develop. Some are very easy. Some are just hard to find. So, but you can fool with that And
now, what about when, because a couple people asked about those really close-up pictures we sometimes want to get.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked particularly of spiders, insects, spider mm-hmm. webs.
Right. Those are macro shots. Now, you get those when you have a camera that is able to take close shots, that has macro capacity, or you get a special lens that you put onto your camera that can do that for you. Lenses are extremely expensive. They usually run into the thousands. So, you know, it's cheaper to buy a camera that has macro capacity. And macro capacity varies with different cameras. Some have can take up to, you know, 2 inches or an inch distance from the insect. And so when you can get a camera that close, or even half an inch to an insect, you can really blow it up. Some cameras have a good zoom lens, so you can be a little bit further but zoom in closer, which is probably easier, because if you get at half an inch to an insect, it's usually going to jump away. But the camera has to have that capacity, or you have to have a lens. Otherwise, if you bring it in that close, it's just going to be a big blur.
Well, that's generally on cameras, it seems to be universal. Isn't that like the tulip symbol that shows macro?
Yes, it's the tulip symbol. But, like I say, some will focus at a half an inch or an inch, and some will only focus at 4 inches, and some will only focus at 9 inches or 8 inches.
Okay, and do you know what that is in millimeters? Usually the camera will say it goes from something or other millimeters to something or other.
Right. I don't recall at the moment.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry for all the interruptions. So you were talking about the second element in composition and really connecting with the subject is the sharp focus.
Sharp focus is very important, unless you're going for soft focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at picture number 3, the gladiola, that's a soft focus shot. Nothing is really that sharp there, but it has a dreamy kind of feel to it. It has a watercolor look. And that's an effect, and I like that effect, and lots of people like that effect. So I use it because it's that watercolor feeling. It's going for an art effect, which is nice. But
and how did you create that then?
Lighting and being close. It's almost, with these gladiolas, the interesting thing about it is the lighting has to be just right to get the light to come through them, and that was evening light. The best lighting I found to get that effect with flowers is, you know, evening. Well, it depends on what time of year it is. It could go as late as 7 o'clock in the evening if it's in the middle of the summer, 6:30, 7 o'clock, where I live in Northern California, or days are shorter, it would probably be about 5 o'clock. It just depends. But you would go out, I mean, I grow flowers in my yard, so I would go out during the day at different times, and I would try them. And when the light is very bright during the middle of the day, the flowers came out very sharp and crisp, in sharp mm-hmm. focus, and they did not look like this watercolor look. They looked like your regular flower. And then I would come back out every hour and take more pictures to see what difference the light did. And it makes a huge difference. And I think that that's really the way to learn more, the most about digital photography and your camera, is to go out and take pictures at different times. Take the same thing in different ways from different angles when the lighting is different.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn so much. Right after you've done it, just go download the pictures and see what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get instant feedback. It's fantastic. You know, it's like having your personal tutor right there. And it's just wonderful. And you start to see the differences that lighting makes. And you can try morning light. You can try evening light. You can try all kinds of light. But here in California, morning light gets too bright too fast in the summer. Different parts of the country, morning light, you know, you can get those beautiful streams of light that come through the trees and all that. Well, you can hardly ever get that here. When morning light comes, it's strong in the summer. You know, it's too strong. So you have to wait for evening light when you have that little period of when it's getting dimmer and it's the sun is just about ready to set, so the angle is very low, and everything kind of glows.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a neat kind of thing. So I would say the biggest trick is morning light or evening light to that.
Okay, so what about inside or like artificial light?
Well,
a little bit to that.
Yeah, I prefer daylight, especially with nature. But you can try. I mean, for different things inside, every different light has a color. You know, fluorescent is kind of a greenish. All your pictures will have a greenish tint, and incandescent will give you a yellowish. So you have settings on your camera usually that will compensate for that. So most cameras will have a fluorescent setting. Most cameras will have a different kind of setting. Usually, though, if you turn on your macro lens, those lighting settings won't work. So you have to then like take care of it in Photoshop or just leave it because, you know, green is not such a bad color for flowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But sometimes it comes out really weird and doesn't look right at all. But just use your settings. It's the easiest thing to do, really. The cameras now have such wonderful automatic settings that it's much easier to use them until you really, really want to get explore and just do really unusual things. Then you can really spend some time learning about those other settings. But I always tell people to really practice with the automatic settings, because automatic settings are easy and you will get good results on the whole. You will see what good pictures are supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see what good focus looks like. You'll see what good lighting looks like. You will learn how to judge that with your inner eye and then learn the manual settings, because then you will have something in your inner eye to compare to. And I think that's an important thing to have, because if you don't have anything to compare to, you can get strange results and not know it.
Okay, great. Now, do you have a system? I'm one that does all that, but then I forget what I did, so it doesn't really help with all my experimenting. Have you developed, and I think you and I are a lot alike, have you developed a system that works for you so that you know what you actually did when you took a particular picture?
Well, one way, pardon me, is to take notes, and I'm never one for handwritten notes, so I just have a document in Word where I put the date, the shots that I took, and some just cryptic notes about what it was. Anything significant, I'll write in there. And then I will date the package of or the download of photos with the same date. I'll use the same basic title for the folder. Or a lot of times I will just, if it's a general note, I will just keep a general file of when you do this, this is the result you get, kind of thing.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just had a thought. You got a little bit to the organizing photos, but I appreciate this. Somehow I just got a thought that I might try for my own scatteredness. I did discover if I'm in gardens or something which has signs of a particular plant, I
mm-hmm.
do start photographing those signs so they're with the picture.
Oh, that's excellent. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I might just make up some little flashcards that say the settings I'm experimenting with and drop them down and use them when I'm taking the photograph.
That would be good, yeah. I must say I haven't mastered that, you know, the exact settings and all yet. I think it's something you eventually have to learn, just memorize. And you do that by doing a lot. But it helps to take notes. Some professional photographers, some of them go around with assistants who write down the photo number and all the facts and the exact
mm-hmm.
names of everything, which is a wonderful luxury to have. Most of us don't have that.
Okay. Somebody did say that, did question, and I guess you probably answered it. One of the questions was that she seems to stumble with, she or he, with metering and the map involved. And since moving from film, she started shooting and reviewing on the screen and shooting some more. Any advice? And it sounds like the advice simply is what you're saying. Just take pictures and make notes.
Yeah, that really is the best advice I can give you, is to go out and try the different meter settings and see what happens. Just do it and do it and do it and do it some more until you really understand the results. There's an intellectual understanding and there's the knowing. There's just that internal knowing it so well that you know what setting to use as soon as you look at, you just look at the scene and you look, you inside your mind, You see the lighting. You know, you do this internal calculation. It's not mental. It's just there. It's like boom, boom, boom. Okay, I'm going to use this setting, and you just know what setting to use. That's the point where you want to get to.
Well, you're talking settings now, though, and you just stated a little bit before that automatic is kind of the best. Play with that. So.
Well, it is in the beginning. Later on, as you learn the good settings, you will want to go manual. You know, as
okay.
you become more professional, as you get better at it, you'll want to go beyond the automatic. But you need that, long as it takes to really get the basics down. And then you start to explore and experiment and to stretch by doing your own settings. Because eventually you will get frustrated with not being able to get the effect you want with the automatic. And this happens at some points. You know, at a certain point, you realize that the automatic settings are limited and that you want to take a shot with something to emphasize or show something a little bit different than what the automatic setting is going to give you. That's when you need to know, to start practicing, to start learning what it's like to set them manually.
Are there common manual settings that you seem to gravitate to?
Nope, there are common automatic settings I gravitate to.
Okay.
I usually like to shoot fast and automatically. The only time I use a manual is when I really have the time and I have a tripod.
Okay.
Normally, I do not use a tripod. I know so many professional, in fact, almost all the professional photographers say, use a tripod, always use a tripod. But frankly, it takes time to set it up. And a lot of times, by the time you set it up, the shot is gone. So I've learned how to steady myself.
What's your formula for steadying yourself in the camera?
Okay. If there's something to lean on it. You know, if there's a tree, if there's a fence, if there's whatever, then I want to put either my whole body against it, or sometimes I will put the camera on top of a fence or a branch, or I'll put the camera on my husband's shoulder or something like that. You know, but you certainly don't want to put it on the shoulder of an unsteady person.
Mm-hmm.
And then hold your arms. If you don't have anything to lean on, I spread my legs shoulder width or a little bit further. I will hold my elbows into my body, and as I'm depressing the camera, I hold my breath.
Okay.
And I hold my breath until it's completely done. And a dim photo will take a long time. But I'm really, really good at holding my breath. And I think, actually, as I look at the Gladiola number 3 picture, that's another reason why that has the watercolor look, because it's not with a tripod. That's a handheld, and so there's natural, it's a slow shutter because it was already getting a little bit dark outside. And in order to get that fuzziness, I did it by hand. I just held the camera for a few seconds to expose that shot enough to get the picture. And it gives it just enough of that little bit of a blur, you know, to look like a watercolor.
Okay, well, probably my interrupting you here has extended probably some of the things, and I want to make sure we cover everything, or briefly, some of the tidbits in the email I sent out yesterday with all your questions.
Well,
I believe you've been pretty much covering how to take powerful and meaningful photos. Is there anything more you want to add?
Oh, yes, I have lots more to say. Why don't you just give me about 20 minutes?
Okay.
Okay? We still have that. Well, okay, I'll try to finish it in 15. Let's look at three friends on a sofa. Now, when you're taking pictures of people, you really want to go for the relationship or the story behind it. You want to go for the emotion. You always want to go for that emotion, because with that, you want to capture the authentic moment. You don't really want people to pose. You want to capture them being real, and you want to capture it when it happens. So you have to be ready for it when it does happen. Now, how do you recognize that authentic moment? Well, for me, it's when an emotion sweeps over me, whether it's something like I look and I go, oh, how cute, or wow, amazing, or anything in between. And with people, it generally starts in the eyes. So you want to make sure the eyes are really well focused and that there's something going on in the eyes. Because that's where you get the connection with the people. So if you look at number 1, three friends on a sofa, you can see that something's been going on. I mean, these people aren't just three strangers. Obviously, they're people that know each other, that like each other. They're happy. They're having fun. You know, they're actually, this is a group that had just finished a project. And so they sat down and they were just really happy that it went so well and that they worked together and it came out really great. And I saw that. I just happened to have my camera there and I saw it and I didn't say anything. I just grabbed my camera and I took a picture. Mm-hmm. And
it's great.
Yeah, it just turned out wonderfully. And only later did I notice that followed. If you look at number two, Three Friends on a Sofa with Graphic, mm-hmm. you'll see that it follows the rule of the triangle. That you've got three people. Anytime you can get a triangle in your photo, because see, this does not follow the rule of thirds. Well, it does as far as the heads. The heads pretty much go on that upper third.
Mm-hmm.
But they are centered, more or less centered, because it follows the triangle, the rule of triangle, which is if you can make a triangle with the lines in the photo, if your eye can follow a triangle, then you've got a well-composed photo. And it just so happened that the first guy's head was bent and the other was bent in and the other one was kind of leaning in. And so you get a triangle when you look at the lines of his nose and his chin and his arm and the other guy's head. And, you know, then you get the person in the middle, which is sort of the focal point. So that was following the rule of the triangle. And if you look at the gladiola, it also follows the rule of the triangle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a centered photo and you can have that. It actually kind of creates a rough triangle. I mean, these lines are very straight.
Right.
And, of course, the natural thing is not as straight, and you don't want it straight. But you can see the triangle in there as you look at the gladiola, even without
right.
the lines.
Right, even the edges of the petals are going in a triangle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Yeah, they are. And that's another really good rule of composition to have in your mind's eye. You don't want to force anything in there, but you just have it in your mind's eye so that when you see it, you have your camera ready and you take that picture. Because that's what happened when I saw this. When I saw it, there it was. What a great shot. Give me my camera.
Mm-hmm.
And click, I was there with it. And it's wonderful when you have your camera and you don't always have your camera, you know. So sometimes you miss a lot of them. And I regret a lot of the photos that I missed or the possible shots that I missed. But when it happens, you sense it. You feel it. You know, and sometimes you feel it coming, but you can't predict the moment it's going to happen, so you just start shooting. If you've got mm-hmm. enough room, if you've got enough battery power, you just start taking shots, taking pictures unobtrusively so you don't prevent the moment from happening, and then you have a much stronger chance of capturing it. In some situations,
right.
especially with kids who never mm-hmm. sit still, you know, you always have to capture them in motion. And
right.
that's a good thing. And also I want to point out in the picture, number one, Three Friends on a Sofa, you can see their arms are bent. Their bodies are bent. And that, when you have people who are bending their bodies, it kind of shows motion, and it's much more interesting than people standing in straight like sticks.
Mm-hmm.
You see the relationship with them, each, you know, all together as a group, because their limbs are doing something. You know, their arms are doing something. Their heads are doing something. They're not stiff. And that is it's a wonderful effect when you can get that to happen, or when you see that happening and you take your picture. And
that's
then
great.
Yeah, and then go out and take pictures and study your results. Look for the results. What happened? What worked? What didn't work? Learn from your mistakes. Learn how you can make the pictures better next time. So once again, the best way to get better at it is just keep taking more pictures with good composition ideas in mind, with good composition elements and in mind, and thinking about focusing, thinking about looking at the eyes, and sensing, learning how to sense, feeling the photo out. You know, when is this going to happen? Is it about to happen now? Or when you get that feeling that just comes over, you're like, oh, that's just, you know, you when you are affected by an emotion of something you see, take the picture right then and there. Just shoot the shot, you know, because if you're affected, so will everyone else be, and it'll come across. And that's the secret to connecting. It's you're going for the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wonderful thing when you feel it.
Even for, well, I guess there is an underlying emotion. If I see a color or something that I stop when I'm walking, I figure there's a reason I stopped. So
yes.
I'll take the picture.
Always follow.
If I see a great one or not.
Yes, always follow that intuition. You know, follow that intuition, and if you're struck by something, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Take the picture of it. Sometimes you can't quite get what you're after at first. So you know what you do? You stick with it. That's what happens to me. Most of the time when I go outside to take pictures or anywhere in nature, it's a feeling of stepping into nature. It starts with that feeling of, oh, how beautiful, or what interesting lighting, or gosh, I didn't know that flower had that color, or something. It starts with this wonder and appreciation of the beauty around you. But if you take the shot and it just didn't turn out like you like, try a different angle. Try a different setting. Keep trying things. Keep trying things. And eventually you will find the setting. Or you will find. Let me talk about something that gets kind of esoteric here. To really connect with nature, you have to leave the mind behind. What I mean by that is you have to access your right brain, which is the creative part of your brain. The left brain is the logical, linear part of the brain, whereas the right part of the brain is the creative, more of the internal, more of the, the sort of non-measurable things is what the right brain specializes in or does for us. So when I think you get better shots, is when you're taking pictures to leave most of the logical linear part of your left brain out of the picture and step into the right brain. Now, the left brain helps you get through the day. It's rational, deals with facts and figures, logical thinking. And you use it to get through everyday tasks like driving, calculating your checkbook, you know, processing factual information. And of course, you need that for pictures. You always need factual information. So you leave that much of it in there. But if you just go by the left brain alone, everything turns out cut and dried, categorized, and not terribly interesting. Unfortunately, because of the fast-paced world we live in, we have to do that a lot in life. We hardly get any breathing room from it. But I think to connect with nature, you have to slow down and enter into its world, the natural world, which is a different state, and it's more accessible by our right brains. Now, the best nature photographers, they hike miles, you know, they get up in the middle of the night. They hike miles to get to secluded spots in the early hours of the morning. They set up their equipment, and then they wait and wait and wait for hours until the specific animal, the insect, or the bird they're waiting for shows up. And then they don't just take a picture and leave. They wait until that bird or flower or insect or animal does what they're looking for. They want something interesting, and you know, in order to take some pictures. And they have learned how not to flinch so they don't scare away their subject, how not to talk. They just sit there and they wait and wait in silence without moving until they capture the essence of their subject. Now, capturing the essence is what it's all about, whether it's people or whether it's nature. Now, let's talk about a flower again. Sometimes you see the shot before you grab your camera, but sometimes all you see is a beautiful flower or a beautiful color or something. You know there's a great shot in there, but nothing definite yet. So how do you get to that great shot? Well, I told you a little bit already, but I'll tell you my way. Now, other photographers may go about it completely differently, but here's my way, and it's good to know how lots of people approach it so that you can learn from all of them. Because eventually you'll settle into a way that works for you or come up with a whole new way that you couldn't come up with until you had the experience of trying the other ways. So try out different things. My way of getting a great nature shot is to develop that inner eye and see the flower in a different way. Now, to do that, I have to suspend all preconceived notions and expectations. Now, realize, though, that I've already internalized good rules of composition. I'm not going to suspend those. I'm going to bring them up when I need them. The ones that I need, automatically, without thinking about it. So you have to let your mind, you have to know what's good, and then let your mind be open to new ideas. Remember that nature is bigger than anything that we can see. Nature, like everything else in the physical world, has an outer and an inner aspect. We normally only see the outer with our physical eyes. Only our inner eyes can see the inner aspect, which is through the right brain. Now, nature has much to teach us, but only to those that are willing to learn and willing to see it. So I have three rules for accomplishing that. First one, suspend all preconceived notions and expectations. Let nature lead you. Let nature show you what to see. So how do you do that? By opening up your right brain and your heart and following your intuition and what you're interested in. So if you see something interesting, look closer. But you want to follow your reactions of awe and wonder. It's like having a child's mind when you find yourself thinking, wow, look at that. Take a picture right there. That's the time to snap the shot. You know, take two, take three, take more. Stay in that state as long as you possibly can and take pictures the whole time because you're in an altered state. It's a slightly altered state, certainly, than the left linear brain when you're working out your finances and your checkbook. You know, it's a completely different state. So stay in that state, because that's the state that can access nature much better. Rule number two, relax and slow down. Breathe deep and low into your belly. That's what'll help you step into the inner world of the flower as much as you can. As I said, it feels like an altered state. Sometimes people need a little help getting into that state. So if meditating helps put you into that frame of mind, meditate a few minutes first. If music does it, put on some good music before you go out to shoot pictures. If movement does it, do some yoga or dance or whatever gets you feeling happy, relaxed, and in tune with nature without drugs or stimulants, because that's not going to help. You want to find a natural way to get to that altered state, to relax, to slow down, and breathe deep. Then we get to rule number three, which is the biggest secret of all, and it's so simple. It's having appreciation and gratitude. It's so basic. It's appreciating the flower or appreciating the scene. The real secret to developing your inner eye and entering that inner world of the flower or the inner world of nature is allowing an outpouring of appreciation to flow from you to the flower, then the plant, then the entire garden, then the entire area, then the sun that allows the flowers to grow, then the water that comes either in the form of rain or your garden hose that also allows the garden to grow, and the wind and the soil and the birds and every insect and every little part of nature. And it sounds so simplistic, like something you did in kindergarten, like something that's kind of silly, but it's the simplest things that are overlooked. By the time we're adults, our lives get caught up in such a tangled wave, we forget all that. We no longer appreciate the very foundation, the very core of life. And that's what we have to go back to and do. And this exercise in appreciation is going back to the very, very basics. Because when you express deep and continuous appreciation to the flower opens up to you. And it really does. This is so amazing that the flower will actually show you the best angle, give you the best shots, because it can't help it. The flower can't help but respond to you, to thank you, and expresses its appreciation in turn. In quantum physics, researchers have discovered that the tiniest particles can't stay the same when they're observed. There's a certain law to this, but they've done many, many experiments. And their equipment would record a particle doing one thing all the time, their equipment, okay? But as soon as the researcher actually looked at it, it would do something else, or it would disappear from view.
Wow.
And for the longest time, they didn't know what this meant. They finally realized that a particle observed changes. And in the case of scientists, the particle would very often disappear. I mean, it would just go poof. It wouldn't be there anymore. It wasn't that it wasn't there. It just didn't want to be seen. Well, that's kind of funny, but imagine somebody staring at you. You know, if someone was just glaring at the back of your head, don't you start to feel ill at ease, a little self-conscious, and you turn around and look, what's going on? Well, the little tiny particles studied in quantum physics are really, really tiny. They are not used to being looked at. They're impossible to see with the naked eye, so they're not used to ever being seen. So when some scientist looks at them in a sterile laboratory in a cold clinical way, I'm sure they feel very ill at ease. They want to run and hide, you know. Lucky for them, they know a few tricks that let them do just that and outsmart those rude researchers glaring at them. And in a way, this is, might seem like a funny way to talk about it, but in another way, it's exactly what's happening. I found that when you communicate appreciation to a flower and gratitude to the flower and all nature, what you're doing is you're opening your heart. And instead of trying to hide from you, you know, you're sending it that flow of good, loving energy. So instead of trying to hide from you, the flower opens its heart and reveals its very essence, because it doesn't need to be afraid of you. And it's been proven by quantum physics. The flower senses it doesn't need to be afraid of you, because it can feel your good vibes, basically, that old term. And it gets that your essence is of love and appreciation, and it'll send that back to you. It's really a beautiful thing that I hope you all experience. Sometimes I've even had the experience of petals moving out of the way to reveal an incredible shot that wasn't there before. Or that I didn't see before, I don't know, but I mean, I could swear it was not there before. It's like the petals moved. It's very mystical, really. It's really a wonderful thing.
I have a whole story on bananas that I'll be writing about, talking to a banana tree and growth and everything that illustrates that.
Yeah.
And I hate to cut you, I love the passion and your excitement, And I want to make sure that before that we complete by 3, and then anybody that wants to stay on and answer some more questions, I will ask some questions. I will unmute briefly, and that will lead into, and this has been wonderful, Rufina. I mean, I'd like to go on all day and discuss.
Yeah.
I think, have a few other calls in this.
Right. I did not get to finish my pictures. Maybe I could just take 2 minutes and just run through them.
Okay.
Okay.
I realize that, but and, you know, when I said I wanted to be cognizant of time. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at strawberries number 5. You'll see that the strawberries move across. It's a macro shot. And there, in a macro shot, you'll often get focused just on the main subject. So the main focus is on the center strawberry, and the leaves around it are a little bit fuzzy. That's okay because it's a macro shot, and you can't really do any better when it's that close. But look how the strawberries go across in a diagonal, basically. They start in one corner, the lower corner, and they go up to the upper corner, and they make a they lead your eye. Same thing with the next one, West Coast Sunset number 6. It's not as big as a diagonal, but it is. And the horizontal line of where the water ends and the clouds begin is on the lower third. We've got the sun there kind of in the middle, but we still have the rule of thirds basically in that sense, but we also have a diagonal that leads your eye diagonally across. Anytime you can get a diagonal, try it, do it. Number 7, the gate. You'll see that the walkway, the cement walkway, starts at one end and the lower right and goes up to the left, upper left. It's a diagonal. At the same time, we have the shadows, the long shadows of the fence posts going across it, making a very, very interesting pattern. So this is a study in patterns. It's not a beautiful photo, but it's an interesting one in that you have lots of interesting lines here. And anytime you can get lines, it's a great thing. Now, the next one, stone number 8, stone quarry steps. This was taken from above. I actually stood on the ledge and I raised the camera over my head to get the picture so that you could see. The steps are really quite large, and didn't know if it would come out anyway, but it did. You could see it's kind of a circular, a little bit of an S, but kind of a circular thing with the steps fanning out from the center, which is very, very interesting. It's a very interesting pattern, and you want to capture patterns as much as you can. Patterns that are organized in an interesting manner, and that one is. So now go to 9, Rockland House. This is a picture where greenery, the trees around the top of the frame actually frame the house. And that's a nice, nice effect. Anytime you can get shrubs, greens, whatever, to make a frame around the subject, you're adding to the interest and the mystique of the picture. Also, look at the diagonal. It's not a direct diagonal from corner to corner, because in a lot of these shots you don't really want that, but you can see that the walkway starts on the bottom and it goes up, it goes off into the distance at a diagonal. And then it just so turned out that the mat was red, the door was red, there was a red flag in the back, and you've got the repeating colors that create it's kind of a circular design, which is interesting. So this picture has a lot of interesting elements. I never get tired of looking at that. It's a simple, simple scene that I just found in town of an older house, just an older historic kind of house in town. But I just love this photo because it's just so sweet. It's nice. And then we go to the number 10, pink rose unfolding, where that is dead center. The center of that flower is right in the middle of that photo. And that works. It's something like the triangle, because we have a swirling pattern. When those leaves open up, It's also like the stone quarry steps, where you have things coming out from a central from a center point, and it's a beautiful swirl that is repeated in nature a lot. It's something that you see in seashells and in different things. So it's just a very beautiful effect that it has. Slightly soft focus, so slightly watercolor effect, but just a really you see the pattern, and that's what's important. It's just kind of a relaxing picture.
Yeah, it's really a beautiful, beautiful photo.
Yeah, it's very relaxing. And this is just simple roses. I mean, these are roses from my backyard. Nothing special, you know. I take so many photos of just things that grow in my backyard. Well, I like to grow plants, so
And it is special because it's special to you when you're going. It's coming into you when you're going out.
Right. Well, this is one of those where I felt really connected to the flower. And
right.
The flower was just kind of opening up to me as I was taking pictures of it. And it's a lovely thing when you get into that state, because your pictures reflect it. It does get reflected in your photos in some way that you can't really define, but it's there. But it's there. So
okay,
thank you, Sheila.
This has been wonderful, mm-hmm. and I'm still cognizant of like 2 minutes left.
Yes, yes.
For those. So if you'd briefly want to tell us briefly about your book and the offer, and there are still some technical questions, I'm going to unmute everybody, and anybody that wants to stay after, and we'll continue on. Rafina can answer a couple of those questions, and if anybody else wants to ask a question.
Yeah.
So as soon as
okay.
Rafina's finished with what she has to share about her book, then I'll unmute you.
Yeah, I'm running a special on my book, Master Your Digital Camera, for people on this call. And you just go to Sheila's link. Sheila has put her link up on one of those pages. And just click through her link, and you'll go to the page and go to the bottom of that page, and it'll say a special discount for Sheila's call, or Sheila's call discount, or something to that effect. And it's going to be $21.97 instead of $29.97 until Sunday night. So you'll get quite a bit off, and I forget exactly how much off, but you'll get some off on that. And I go through the rules of composition with more pictures, and I explain lots of the book covers so much. I cover a lot about, you know, metering, lighting, and just all the things that you need to know, all the things that you need to know to take good pictures.
And you also, now you'll hear some background noises. I've unmuted you. If you do have a dog or something in the background, if you'll put 4-star until you want to talk, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then when you go on to the link that I'll be sending you is etelatours.com/rafina.html, and you will be able to, I'm also making an offer of anybody that buys the book, an additional $10 off the teleclasses, and all that will be explained. I realize that we've gone through so much here, I may do a mini survey, and I'd love for you to tell us what worked for you and what didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Rafina and I have a great connection, I believe, and I'd like to continue on doing some other things like this, Rafina, and I hope
yeah.
that's so for you.
It would be great. It would be a lot of fun.
And also, when you're on Rafina's site, you'll see that she does have some free mini courses, and somebody asked about buying a camera.
Yeah, that's a huge answer that, you know, I can't tell anyone exactly what camera to buy because every camera is different and it's according to your needs. So you have to get really clear on what you need in a camera and understand the things that you'll need to look for when you're looking for a camera. Now, one of the things that I really wanted was macro. Because I already knew I wanted to take macro shots. And when I saw the Nikon Coolpix 4500, which swivels. It swivels so that you can take pictures from all kinds of angles. I just had to have that camera. I just knew I needed that swivel, and I was so right. I didn't see the camera beforehand. I just saw it online. But I knew I had to have it with the swivel, and it just has turned out to be a great camera for me. And now they have cameras with many more megapixels, so eventually I'm going to move up. But for now, I still love my camera.
Briefly, do you want to explain the good thing, or that's there anyway, in megapixels?
Well,
sizing.
Yeah, megapixels have gone up a lot lately. So you can get cameras with low megapixels if you don't have much storage or if you don't want to buy external storage. The bigger, the more megapixels you have, like if you get an 8-megapixel camera or a 10-megapixel, you're going to be taking massive-sized photos. They're going to be huge. You will fill up your computer hard drive right away. So you will need to get external storage to store those photos on, or you'll need to burn them onto a DVD. Burning them onto a DVD works. It's fine. I find that much better than burning them to a CD. CDs don't hold that much, and sometimes they're slow to access, whereas if you burn them on a DVD, they're faster. It holds so much more. And it works if you don't mind having your pictures out on DVDs all the time. External drives make it a little bit easier. They're expensive, though. DVDs are a lot cheaper. The more megapixels you have, the bigger the picture, and the better, you know, the sharper it is. So it's nice, but it's not necessary. My camera is still 4 megapixels, and it prints out beautiful photos because you can now take your, you know, just you can take your pictures and like burn them on a CD and take them to even Costco. I find Costco develops pictures quite well, or you can take them to a custom lab. But for me, the custom lab is far away and Costco's down the street. So I just take them to Costco and have them develop there, and they turn out beautifully. Really, really quite nice. Once in a while, something will be off. The colors will be off or something. They'll just do it again for you. Not a big deal.
Hmm. Okay. Someone asked a question about photo editing software that you'd recommend, and I do believe, do you not have some of that that goes with your package?
I have a very, it's not a photo editing, I don't think, it's just a photo, I forget exactly what it does. It's just photo storage.
Okay.
But Photoshop is the best. It's the most professional. Photoshop Elements is almost as good. And certainly for the home photographer, Photoshop Elements is all you need. And it's just about $100.
Actually, you can get Photoshop Elements even for a lot less. And it was made for digital cameras. It's what I've used and recommended, recommend very highly.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, because I do banners and headers and things for clients, I need Photoshop.
Right.
So I use Photoshop because I do a lot with text on top of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you're just working with pictures, Photoshop Elements is really amazing. So I highly recommend it. There are others. Just look around, and you can go to sites that have reviews with ratings and see what other people who've used it say and read what they say, and you'll pick out things that will make you lean towards one or lean towards the other. So that always helps. And Amazon has reviews on a lot of things too. So there's a lot of places where you can find reviews. You just have to do your research. And that information changes constantly. So when you're ready to buy something is the time to go and read up on it. And then you can find it. The software that I use for organizing my photos, because I need to look and to find the exact shot I need to see them. So I use ACDC, which is spelled capital A-C-D and then S-E-E. ACDC, I think that's acdc.com probably. If it's not, I'll find the link and I'll send it to you, Sheila, so you can put it up
great.
On your page.
Okay, great. That's what I'm sending back as follow-up.
Mm-hmm. And what that allows me to do is open up each file and see the thumbnails, and then I can see each one bigger however I want. It's very versatile. It allows me to find photos very, very quickly, which is a big help for me because I have lots and lots of files of photos.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I see people have left, and before anybody else leaves, I want to thank you all for being on this call. Really appreciated your presence, your input, and feedback. It's been wonderful. Okay, anybody here have a question that we've missed that you'd like to ask or something that's come up during the call?
Yes, this is Arlene.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know about taking shots for the webs, for web pages.
Uh-huh.
What's the best way to do that with natural light, or do I use a tripod or what?
What are you taking pictures of?
Art.
Art? Ah, okay, that's a whole different thing. Product shots are always best in natural light that's diffused, which is usually outside and on a bright day. You either go under a tree or you make a little canopy with a sheet or nylon, ripstop nylon, translucent basically. But with if you're taking art, you also want it to be diffused a little bit. Yes, you use a tripod. You must use a tripod because you have to have a steady camera, and you want to turn your camera at a right angle to the art. So the way that I've done it a lot of times is you can put it on a table, or you can just put it on a concrete patio or something. Put a sheet down or a background color, just a background color.
Okay, I've used like a black background.
Yeah.
Actually, they've turned out pretty good, pretty excellent, actually. The mm-hmm. ones that I'm really having problems with are anything that has glass on it. I've tried everything with light, without light, with flash, without flash, everything, and I can't.
You can't get them out of the glass?
Well, I'm in the picture, from the glare
uh-huh.
of the light.
Well, yeah, you can't take the picture out of the glass. I mean, glass will glare.
No, some of the glass doesn't come out. That was my solution too. But
yeah, this gets really, really tough with pictures because you have to look at them straight on. If you take it from an angle, which would diminish the glare, you would distort the picture.
Right.
So
yeah, I've tried putting the timer on, but then the cameras, since the camera's on a tripod, the camera's in the picture. You know, so
they're too big to scan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that's a problem. Because there are people with large scanners who specialize in scanning art, even lumpy art. And you can find them online. I had a file of them, but I don't know that I could find that right now. But there are people that have large scanners, but I don't know how big your photos are. I mean your pictures are, because, you know, you can't get huge scanners. Scanners do have a limit.
28, you know. I mean, some of them are big. There's only like five of them, but, you know, they're just not coming out. So.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough one, and I don't know, you're doing all the right things. You just have to make sure that it's diffused light, but when there's a sheet of glass over the art, you're just going to get some reflection. You can touch it up with Photoshop.
Yeah, I've tried that. It hasn't worked either.
Oh.
I'll just keep exploring it, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't tried that one, so I haven't actively looked for a solution. Well, keep working with it. You might find that if you take it just at a slight little angle, you might be able to get past that. Or if you supplement light from the side, I don't know if that would work at all.
I'll try to find the answer to that also. Who is this speaking?
I'm not giving up on this.
Yeah. You have quite a task in front of you.
This is Darlene.
Okay, Darlene. Thanks. Let's see what I can find out, too. And I see, are you complete?
Yeah, I am.
For now on that, Darlene?
Yes.
Okay, somebody with a 509 area code actually has a hand up, so that person figured out which control. Do you have a question?
Yes, this is Judith. How are you, Sheila?
Hi, Judith.
Okay, your question?
I just wanted to say how much I appreciated her about the esoteric part of it and the quantum physics. That is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And also I wanted to mention the fact that Photoshop is very expensive. It's made by Adobe, which I'm not thrilled with. There is another company out there called Serif Software.
Mm-hmm.
It's a United Kingdom, and it has PhotoPlus and movie making and all of that. And as for the lady that has the artwork, you can take it at an angle and then correct it, so that it comes back to being square again in the photo, you know, in like PaintShop Pro or something like that. I'm sure Photoshop has it too. It's a matter of taking it at an angle and then doing the technical thing inside the program to make it flat. You know.
Yeah, you can. Sometimes it produces results that aren't quite true, but that may be your best option.
Well, as far as the glare, it would be. I know what she's speaking of, because I was an artist, regular artist. Now I'm a digital art. You know, I do paint with digital art.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't do much with my camera. As Sheila will tell you, I can't even, you know, function with it. It reads like a Boeing 747 manual. And I have found, though, that I'm not, but what I found, what you said, applied to painting,
mm-hmm.
not your composition and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
whether
same
you're
rules.
A photographer or an artist,
yes,
that holds very true.
Yes.
And the inner part of it, that's exactly how you go into your alpha state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Judith. And if you'll email me that, I know somewhere on my files I have it, but if you'll email me that link for the Serif software, I'll include that with the
I'll email you the link where if they call the gentleman, they get it for cheaper.
Right. Okay. Just email me that information, and I'll include it in the follow-up.
All right, Sheila.
Yeah, that's great information. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sheila?
Uh-huh.
This is Linda.
Hey, Linda.
I used to be a medical illustrator. And I know sometimes when we have something under glass or getting a reflection, and I don't know if they'll let them do this or not, but there's a spray that you can just spray over the glass that gives it a matte finish, and you can wipe it right off.
Hmm.
Sometimes that'll take care of the glare.
That's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Great. Do you know what that spray is?
God, it's been...
If you recall, sometime within the next, whatever, and send that to me, I'll add that to what I'm sending out to people.
Okay. I know you can get it at an art store. You can use it to fix either a workable fix or a fix after you've used pastels or, you know, whatever.
Oh, that, but just that fix, that fix you would use on glass? The
yeah.
fixative?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great.
There's a spray, and you can just, you know, very light cover over it will just knock out the glare, and then you can wipe it right off.
Is that the Krylon workable fixative?
I don't know if it's the workable or the other, but probably if you called an art store, they could tell you, and they might have something better by now. I mean, I'm talking 30 years ago we used to use this.
The next step of that is that they have developed a spray you can spray onto your license plate so that when the cameras take pictures of you running a red light, they won't see it.
Wow.
But I think that's an extra glare spray. I hear that that's a very hot seller.
Oh, it is. Okay, you can Google that one maybe if
yeah.
the other doesn't work.
I have no idea what it's called, but I know it's a hot seller.
Oh, that's cute. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. This is what's great. That's what I love about the telephone, the calls and our teleclasses is the mixing of minds and
yeah.
you know, all kinds of things that move everyone forward and inspired. Any other comments or questions?
I have one more question, Sheila, real quickly. Would you repeat the name of the camera that you have that you like so much? You said it's a Nikon what?
Are you talking about me, my camera?
I'm sorry, I'm talking to...
Yes, Rufina.
Yeah, I have a Nikon Coolpix 4500.
4500.
Yeah, but that's already an older camera.
No, I understand. I'm just, and I have seen some of them with that swivel, and I was
yeah.
just trying to get that down so I could
mm-hmm.
refer to it.
I love the swivel. Nikon's come out with...
One of the things you mentioned in our conversation, Rufina, was also checking out the feel of it, the hand.
Right, right. That's so important. You know, I thought I wanted a small camera, and I do for traveling someday, but when I put my hands on those controls, all the little buttons and everything,
right.
they're teeny tiny, and I end up pressing two instead of one,
right.
and it's very awkward. It's very hard to press the one that you want. So for me, I had to have a bigger camera with a better grip.
Right.
You know?
I don't know. I like something that has a little substance to it.
Exactly.
You know,
it has a little weight to it. You know,
it,
some
it
of those cameras,
like
they're featherweight and they feel like garbage. They're not, but they feel like it.
What about the cameras with a disc?
Oh, you know, for me, I find that the disc space is limiting. I mean, you can take a lot of disc with you, but discs can get scratched. They can go wrong. And they're big and they're hard to take with you different places. It's so much easier to have the flashcard for me. I love the flashcard.
Yeah, well, I kind of screwed mine up, I think, because it won't tells me there's no card in it anymore. Like I told you, I need a camera that you just point. Don't do anything.
Okay, so you need to find one with a good point and shoot. How many megapixels do you need?
Probably not many. I just want to take pictures of, like, my sculptures and my cat.
Then you don't need very many. Are you going to take them to develop them or put them on the web?
I would put them on the web.
Oh, well, you would do fine with a 3 or 4 megapixel, you know.
Yeah, I have a 4,
uh-huh.
but like I said, I've never
it's
been
too
able
difficult.
To
yeah, so you need to find an easier point and shoot camera. My camera is fairly easy, the Nikon, but it did take me a while just to learn the automatic controls, how it's done. There are cameras that have really easy menus, easy to access. That so you would want a camera that where you can get into the menus really fast, really easy, that has good automatic settings, but not overwhelming settings, because if you have a lot of settings, you're going to end up scrolling through these menus and having to click a lot of buttons to find them, and you don't want to do that if you're having trouble. You just want a camera. I don't want to tell you to buy this one or that one, because it's really quite personal, and you have to research it more. But and you have to, and then research it online, read reviews, read what people have to say, go to stores that have these cameras on display and try them. Put your hands around them, pick them up, look in the viewfinder, work with them, and then you'll get a sense for what you like. You'll just start to get a sense of it, and you'll gravitate towards certain certain cameras, and then you'll kind of narrow it down, and then probably if you get a sale on one, you'll end up buying that one, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it takes...
I can tell you I'm very computer literate, but when it comes to a digital camera...
You will get camera literate as well. You just have to work with it. It just takes a little bit of time in dealing with it.
I have an Olympus.
An Olympus is a good camera. Have you ever gone to the shortcourses.com site? He has training manuals for every camera.
Oh.
Pretty much. Shortcourses.com is, I believe, what it is. Dennis, I forget his last name. But they're good. And sometimes you can go to your manufacturer and get a little more help, or you can call them and they'll talk you through. This is a big help. If there's a phone number and they will talk you through the functions...
Yeah, because it has a zoom and everything else on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a nice, solid.
Yeah, Olympus is great. They're very, very good cameras. Well,
there's also another source that, that's how I actually found Rufina, was Steve's Digital Cameras, and I'll throw that out. And he has listing of every function. If your camera's on there, he goes through all, you find your camera and all the different functions of it are there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it was shortcourses.com and
yes,
Steve's Digital.
I think it's Steve's Digi cameras, right?
No, it's
Steve's
I'm
Digital.
I'm pretty sure it's digital is the URL.
Okay. Yeah. And then if you can find a support line that comes in the manual of your book, and you can call someone and talk to the techs and ask them, this is what I'd like to do. How do I do that on this camera? They will talk you through it. They've been trained to be patient. and they'll talk you through it, and you just keep working at it. And, you know, you can call them every day. It doesn't matter. They don't charge you, you know.
Yeah. Well,
It is steves-digicams.com.
Oh, okay, steves-digicams. All right.
Well, if you just put Steve's Digicams, it flips over anyway.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay.
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 Anyone else? Okay. Rufina, it has been wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. It sure has been fun, and I really enjoyed doing it.
Thank you both so much. This has been wonderful.
Well, thank you for being on the call, and thank you everyone for being on the call. I really appreciate you being there.
Yeah, and my thanks also. And again, we'd love the feedback, what worked, what didn't work, what we might be able to do for you next. So I don't even want to end it, and I guess that's it.
Yeah, well, every good thing comes to an end, so we're going
right.
to have to say bye. So thank
okay,
you.
Okay, so we'll see you all online, and I hope that we'll get some feedback from you in response to a link that I send you. And I'll get you out all the information. Should be out by tonight, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.